Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun. Go.
Podcasters, Al Martin here for Making Data Simple. I hope everybody out there is healthy, safe. It is a crazy world in which we live. Before I begin, a couple things I want to say. One is a special thanks to our producers. We continue to set new marks on our downloads. They do a ton of good work. I'm the worst part of that mix. So thanks to those guys. I also want to welcome a new producer, that being Kate Brown, who I've known Kate for a long time, and she's a growth mindset thinker. She's only going to make this podcast better. So thanks to all of them. Again, as always, let us know how we're doing. Rate us wherever you listen to this podcast, and please reach out to almartintalksdata@gmail.com. I'd be happy to solicit any comments you have there or any potential guests. We've got a lot of great guests from that vehicle. Today, we are going to hit COVID-19 again. Yes, I am still in my home office. I have no idea when this is going to end like anyone else. I don't know, we're 4 or 5 weeks into this. It's all blending together. Somebody was talking about it being Tuesday all day today, and it was actually Wednesday, so I'm confused. I think I've worked more now than ever, and I look at the economy and I'm concerned like everybody else, but we'll get through this. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The other thing I want to say is I'm very empathetic to anyone that's impacted by COVID-19. Please know that here at IBM, we're thinking a lot about the world, the community. And we have a team inside of IBM. It's called the Data Science Elite Team. And what I wanted to do today is this team has been doing a ton of good work, but they are also responding directly to COVID-19. And so we're going to talk about leveraging data and AI in times of crisis, what the Data Science Elite Team is doing in response, things like industry accelerators, community resources, webinars, practical and real-time proof of concepts and use cases. And to do this, I have two guests. One, if you listen to the podcast, you would recognize, is Winnie Allen. Winnie has been with IBM for 3 years. Is that all you've been? 3 years?
Yeah, Winnie? Just 3 years. Feels a lot longer though.
I'm sure it does. Well, she originally, when she came on to the podcast, she was a senior manager of the data science and AI portfolio for marketing and product marketing. Now she is the director of data science and AI elite business. So we're going to pick her brain in just a second. Also, we got a second guest, which is Brittany Bogle, who is a senior data scientist, machine learning engineer. I guess, Brittany, you add all the technical know-how, the depth that Winnie and I can't provide then, right? That's your role.
I guess that's the way you can put it. But yeah, I'm kind of the boots on the ground, working with our clients, working on data science use cases.
Well, welcome to you both. I appreciate it. And as always, now in every meeting that I'm in, either internal to IBM, external, talking with customers, first I got to ask, I hope you guys are healthy.
Yes. Thank you, Al. It's an interesting time. So for sure, we want to make sure that our listeners are healthy and safe. And on my side, you know, I've been kind of cooped up in the house for the last 3 weeks, but I can't complain. Everything is going well.
And Brittany, you're good?
Yeah, everything's good here.
You know, Winnie, I have to say this one thing, because every time I think of you, we had dinner at one time, and I don't know how we got into it, but the verdict that you ended up with is that you hated frat boys, and then we carried on, and he said, yeah, but I married one. So how's your frat boy? Is he good? Is he healthy?
Yes, he's doing well. He actually works for one of the local grocery chains. He's a developer. For those listeners in the South, you probably know it's called HEB. And they are doing an incredible amount of work to make sure that people are getting the food they need. They're delivering to, you know, houses. They're having curbside. So super busy, but, you know, feel good about the work because we are really trying to help our community here.
Yeah, the stock must be going up there. That's one of the areas where stock is good. Any, before we jump in, any tips at staying at home that you've learned? Any surprises?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a team, and we can talk, I think we're going to talk about this a little bit more in depth, but as a team, I think we've been doing our best and checking in with each other often, probably more often than normal. Days are seeming to blend together more than usual. But yeah, I think just taking time for ourselves is really important in this time, since work and outside of work life can blend together even more so than usual.
How about you, Winnie? Anything you've learned?
Staying at home, you know, all the time. Yeah, staying home. I thought, you know, being an extrovert, I would go crazy. There is a little bit of that, at least at the beginning. But I've found that all this extra time from, you know, not having to commute, not having to travel, I've been able to pick up some, you know, new hobbies, and also been able to, you know, kind of pick back up some old things. Like, I'm starting to play the piano again. I used to be a concert pianist, and then all of a sudden, yeah, this was like when I was way, way younger, you know, haven't played in like, I don't know, over a decade, and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, kind of tinkling with that again. I started cooking a lot more, baking. I think the whole COVID-19 is going to be the start of my 19 pounds of weight gain. You know, just generally, I think staying mentally and physically healthy is important. And so whatever you need to do to kind of keep your mind busy, I found that to be really helpful.
I heard somebody refer to the quarantine 20 the other day.
Oh, yeah. Well, that sounds about right.
I'm working on my quarantine 20. That's funny. You know, one word, I mean, so did your parents push you into the piano piece?
Oh, yes, very much, you know, part of the Tiger Mom thing, you know. I mean, you know, I'm Chinese, so definitely got the piano down, was really good at math, did, you know, chess club and all of that. So,
wow, those are smart things. Very nice.
Different, I guess, but also very stereotypical.
You know, one of the proudest moments I have of my oldest daughter, I pushed her into piano as well, and she ended up dropping it after a while, I think, like most kids, maybe. Now she wishes I would have pushed her harder, which is ironic, given at the time, you know, she was done with it. But she did a recital and forgot her music. And, I mean, there was like 300 people there. Forgot her music when they called her up. She actually had the wrong music. She picked up the wrong music. And the thing I'm most proud of is she's kind of shy. And I was panicked because I'm watching her going, oh, what's going to happen? She put the new music down, something that she hadn't practiced for, hadn't learned, and then proceeded to play. And I thought that was awesome. I mean, you know, it's funny the things that you find is things that you're most proud of. And she didn't play it that well, just being honest, because she hadn't practiced it.
I mean, that's gutsy.
Yeah, it was gutsy.
Courage.
That's right. That's right. All right, so let's jump in. And before we dive into some of the data science and AI elite aspects that are going on with regards to COVID-19, I need you to explain to me for the, you know, we've done this before, but I think it's a good refresher. High level, what the data science elite team is,
sure,
how it functions, and the roles that you guys specifically play. Winnie, I'll go start with you, and then Brittany, I want you to follow up if you could.
So actually, the full name, the branded name, is IBM Data Science and AI Elite Team. It was created over 2 years ago as a key plank of IBM's AI strategy to help companies overcome the challenges of AI adoption through innovative technologies. So we're a team of about 100 very diversely experienced data scientists, data engineers, data wranglers, you know, visualization specialists, really just people working day in and out with data. And so this team, we work side by side with clients to provide guidance, skills, tools, all based on a proven agile AI methodology to put data science projects on an accelerated track and help clients scale. There's one very important distinction for what we do, and it is that we are an investment from IBM for our clients to help them succeed in solving real problems using AI. Specifically, what I do on the team, so I lead the strategy and growth of the team, and the vision is really to help maximize business impact and achieve broad awareness of data science and AI for our clients. And so, you know, I've been in this role now for about 4 months, and I've grown a team, I've really seen firsthand what the team has been able to do with our clients and the impact that they've made. So I'm super proud to be part of this team. Brittany is a key integral part of this team. And I'm really happy that she's able to join this podcast to share some of the experiences and learnings that she's had on this team.
Yeah, Winnie, I think you described our team to a T, our team's mission. I don't have anything else really to add to that. But yeah, my role on the team is I'm one of the senior data scientists for the North America team. Like Winnie mentioned, we're a team of 100, approximately 100 data scientists worldwide. And so we have a large group of data scientists over in Europe and then several in Asia Pacific as well. But my role on the team is mainly to help scope, go out and meet with the clients and scope with them data science use cases from these broad questions. And the client, even though my background and my experience prior to IBM is in healthcare, we really work across industry, and I think that kind of gives us an advantage to see how use cases actually are replicated and emulated and can be modified across industry and feed that information back to our clients during these scoping exercises. But after we scope the use case, we really try to execute that AI agile methodology that Winnie was mentioning. And so our goal is to really execute in really just a matter of weeks and get them to a point where they could potentially operationalize or put these models and these insights into production.
In a really small fun fact, Brittany's actually, I think, the first hire onto the team. Is that right, Brittany? I think we had a debate over this a while back.
Yeah, we did have a debate over it. Yeah, I'm one of the first, probably like one or two. We have an ongoing argument about who was really hired first, but no.
Yeah, so Brittany's really been here since the very beginning and has seen the team grow and has lots of experiences and lessons learned to be able to share.
Yeah, definitely. We started out with just a few dozen of us back in whenever I joined. I was one of the first external hires. There was a team that had been transitioned into this, what's now data science and AI elite from inside IBM. We really went from just a few dozen to close to 100 in less than 2 years, which has been amazing to see.
So Brittany, your background though is industrial engineering, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you make that transition from something like industrial to data science and machine learning and et cetera, et cetera? Or is it all the same?
There is a lot of overlap. So yeah, it's a really good question. I get that a lot. My background, yeah, is in industrial engineering, which is kind of broadly the study of applying mathematics to making systems more efficient or making operational decisions to some optimization-related question. And whenever I was going through my PhD program, I got really interested in trying to ground, you know, some of this high level methodological, theoretical stuff that we were trying to develop to real problems. And I got really interested in cardiovascular disease. My advisor had actually had a cardiac arrest right before I joined the program. And so he was undergoing kind of this massive transition in his focus too. And so we really aligned very quickly, and I started partnering with clinical and epidemiological experts in downtown Chicago, and they gave us access to the data, and we were able to really solve and look at and model some really cool cardiovascular disease problems. And so that's where I started getting more to the data and the what you would consider traditional machine learning. But really, my expertise is in what we refer to as decision optimization. So I try to combine those two techniques a lot whenever I'm working with clients now. So we can predict things, but then we can actually leverage the prescriptive side of data science to make decisions.
And Winnie, you went from computer engineering to electrical engineering, my favorite, by the way, and then found yourself in data science as well, right? Is that where we're all headed?
I guess that is the future, right? I have a master's degree in electrical engineering, which on this team, I feel very dumb because I don't have, more learning behind that. But I started out as an integrated circuit designer, which was very different. Moved over to being an architect, a systems engineer, and then, more moving towards the business side as a business development manager and marketer. But what I found, through this really kind of roundabout way is that I am still very much an engineer at heart. I love to tinker. I love to create new things. And what all my years of education has taught me was really that critical thinking, really be able to look at problems with that, that set of critical mind. And so I, as you said before, I was part of the marketing team, managing the product marketing of a portfolio of analytics tools, as well as data science tools. That really helped me kind of understand better, as well as hone in on my skills to leverage data and analytics to solve any problem. And so I feel like that has set me up really well to my current role, which is, actually working with data scientists, be it, internal to IBM or external, to understand what's going on, to really understand the way of thinking. And as you will probably hear later on, when we dive a little bit deeper, it's really important to understand, how do you define a problem? What does that really mean? And how do you actually go about solving the right problem? And I think all of that can relate to, what I have learned through my career.
So, yeah, I think electrical engineering did the same for me. It taught me how to learn more than anything else. In fact, I got out of college and went straight into software. I'm a little bit envious that you were doing circuits. I skipped that whole thing altogether, went straight into software. But like you, I'm a problem solver. So as I'm looking at the data science elite team, and I'm probably, is it okay that I call it the shorter name?
Or you can call it the DSE team, because we still answer to that. Data science and AI elite team is just a complete name, but it's really long.
All right, I'm gonna go with DSE. We're at acronyms at IBM, so makes it easier. But I want to get into the use cases, namely COVID-19, and talk about what we're doing there. But a lot of companies are setting up data science teams. Are you strictly focused on the use cases and data science and machine learning models to get a client up and running and then off to the races? Is there also assistance in terms of simply helping clients set up a center of excellence themselves, that data science team, and how to do it right so you can make things efficient and get to business and get return on investment as quickly as possible?
Yeah, sure. We definitely get into conversations, especially in the very early conversations with clients, as we're thinking from like broad use cases, what's a priority for their organization. It comes up a lot, the questions of how can they design a center of excellence. And I think where our team feeds into that is we don't explicitly deliver work for them or help them strategize, because we're really focused on the executing an individual use case. And it's kind of grounded in the philosophy that our team has seen is most successful for organizations, which is try not to boil the ocean, focus on a use case that you can execute, deliver value, and try to figure out the return on the investment for that particular use case that you think has value, and build from there. And so what we do is we partner with other IBM groups, other IBMers, and kind of help package that information correctly so that they can then have those conversations back with the executives at the clients we've partnered with to help them deliver the center of excellence strategy and structure.
Fair enough. Let's jump into it. we're at a time where we're now seeing supply chains broken. We got economic crisis going on. Business models that need to survive or pivot. Business continuity. I think a lot of priorities are changing in businesses right now, depending on where you're at. Last week, we talked about the IBM COVID-19 dashboard and the Weather Channel app, and I certainly hope the listeners have went out there and experienced it. You can track the COVID cases. On the data science side, let's start with what are the most critical ways we can utilize data analytics and AI during a pandemic?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think it seems like every data scientist, both just friends outside of IBM that I've come up with through the academic or my prior jobs, all of my friends that are kind of in the data science or modeling space, we're all thinking about this, right? Like, how can we use data science and machine learning and really put it to work? And
because this is like a data science problem, is it not, right? I mean, yeah, the more data you have,
it definitely is. I think there's an interesting overlap right now with epidemiology and public health in the immediate sense, right? Like, there are great models already out there that are pretty tried and true, maybe aren't localizable. And I think that's where machine learning can come into play, is these large disease epidemiology models and disease spread, they're really based for population dynamics. So how many people are going to be infected at this point in time versus moving to something like how many people are going to be recovered or how many people are going to be in the hospital at any point in time. Those are really good for big picture population level questions. Where machine learning, I think, really comes into play and lends its arm to this effort is helping to kind of customize and localize those sort of models, so you have a better, really regionally specific model or even hospital specific model. And those are the types of questions that I see are coming up a lot where those traditional models aren't addressing them. The other big arm to this, and I'm probably biased because of my optimization background, but a lot of the clients and partners that I've been talking to over the past few weeks, there's really an urgency for planning decisions. And a lot of people don't traditionally think of decision optimization as necessarily an explicit part of the data science or AI, universe. But in this sense, it really is. Like, it's really the prescriptive arm. And things like supply chain and inventory optimization and stockpiling and redistribution of things like ventilators or resource-constrained items, those are really critical for right now. And I think that's where this other kind of prescriptive arm comes in.
Yeah, and I want to add to what Brittany says, right? So, you know, the immediate needs we definitely see in the healthcare industry, you know, in the supply chain. But it really affects us all in many different ways, you know. So it really, there's a more urgent need to optimize not just resources, but minimizing customer turnover. You know, so we see that a lot of the brick and mortar stores are closing, whether it's temporarily or even permanently, and shifting to digital. So, you know, that creates kind of a surge in customer support requests. How do you handle that? And you know, on the financial side, you know, increase in demand for loan refinancing, new loans, potentially risk of defaulting loans. You know, how do you prepare for things like that? Increased operational risks of, you know, everybody's working from home now. What does that really mean, right? How do you have, you know, kind of a command center, if you will, to see all the different risks or risk elements contributing to that? Hiring freeze is affecting team expansion. How do you, you know, allocate what you have to do these new additional projects? So I guess it really comes down to what is the most urgent use case you have. And there are definitely places where data science can be used to help in, you know, all these things that we just spoke about.
So I know you've got some of the, I don't want to call them standard use cases, but use cases that we would see during non-pandemic times that have become more prioritized, like loan modeling, et cetera. Though I think in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know how you can predict some of this stuff. The models have to be changed relative to the world we're seeing today. But I also understand you're working on some really critical use cases of the day, like optimization of ventilator distribution and redistribution, and ICU bed staffing and optimization. Can you talk about, well, just talk about these in general on the surface, and then how you're leveraging data and AI to come up with these solutions and any anomalies you're seeing, any unique surprises you've encountered, given the new world we're in?
Yeah, so in the past couple of weeks, our entire team has really come together and gone through a couple of exercises to help identify where could we help, what's feasible, what are the clients that we are working with and the partners that we have relationships with, what are they coming to us with, and what are the most important pressing things that we could possibly get out in a realistic way, in an order of weeks and not months. And really, that's where those two use cases that you mentioned, this ventilator distribution and redistribution use case and ICU prediction and also possibly staffing and optimization of ICU and just hospitals in general. Those arose through this prioritization technique. And the reason we prioritize those is because we actually found partners that were willing to work with us. We found that, you know, it's central to our team to work with clients and not just necessarily hypothetically work on a problem. We want to ground everything in reality. So we prioritize those two because we have potential partnerships in development, and we're executing on them right now.
So are those the two top efforts today?
For our team, yes. So we have one partnership with a hospital in the United States that we're actively working with them on this ICU question. And right now it's not so much an optimization problem. It's more of they just need to know if and when when will they hit the peak? Will they have enough beds? And then the next phase of that question is, yes, like how could we optimize or make decisions about staffing if it comes to that? So that's actively being worked on. We generated some templates for ventilator distribution and redistribution, and we're working to find a partner to actually insert some data for that. But we really want to build it out with a more realistic scenario. So that one's more under development, but definitely the ICU and kind of predicting hospitalizations on this localized front is the top use case that we're working on right now.
So the ventilator piece is under development. It's in exploratory phase, I guess. And if anybody's listening, they could take advantage of it by getting in contact with you. But we've already got a partner with the ICU. Are we going to run out of beds? You should know the answer. You've already done the analysis.
It depends on where you are. I think the most recent projections that have come out on kind of even a state level, in the United States at least, suggests that it's less dire of a situation than the original models were projecting. But the question is still open-ended, I think, just due to for the localized effort, you know, for an individual hospital, are they going to run out of beds or not? That's kind of the hardest question to answer. And something we hope to find out with this partner for them.
Well, I figured that was kind of the answer you might give. And it is good to know that things are a little bit better than we originally presumed, but you always assume the worst and hope for the mm-hmm. best. The question is where are you getting all the data? Can you walk me through the data aggregation and the models that you're correcting around the ICU in question?
Yeah. So the partner we're working with is sharing their data with us. That's aggregated. It's not personally identifiable data. But for the purposes of what we're looking at, we don't really need it to be that granular. So that's good. But yeah, I think hospitals, once we get done working on this use case, what we're hoping to do is share the tools and the assets kind of templated on this, so that other hospitals or healthcare systems can modify it using their own data. And the data we're using is data that's already kind of in a templated format that's recently been asked for from the CDC, from the federal government in the United States, for all hospitals to be submitting on a daily basis this tracking of their bed census, their ICU bed census, and the cases and the number of cases that they've tested.
So, but tell me a little bit more about the equation, if you know it. If you don't, we can move on. But I got to believe you're looking at models, you're looking at the availability in beds, you got to know what the hospital has in terms of capacity. Then you're looking at the number of projected patients based on what you're getting either from the CDC or otherwise to be able to, you know, put an AI model in and then project, hey, you're going to need this number of beds, you need this number of capacity, whatever. I mean, I don't know the answer, but could you shed some light on how you're putting that model together?
Yeah, we're leaning on some of these larger population models, for example, at the state level that are already being produced because we don't want to start from scratch. And that's what some of these models that are being publicized are probably the most, there's no reason to start over and kind of start from the beginning with that effort. So our goal is to kind of use that as the input and then start breaking it down and trying to determine what percentage of those, the state level or the county level predictions feed into the hospital system that we're partnering with. And from that, using their specific information related to hospitalization, their testing rate, how the percentage of positive cases, and the kind of rate of move, the number of days that they would stay in the hospital, the percentage of patients moving from the hospital to a more severe condition that would put them in the ICU, and then the overall recovery time. And all of those pieces are being put together in a modified version of an epidemiological model. The basis of that is an SEIR model for those familiar with epidemiological approaches.
Could you describe SEIR?
Yeah. SEIR is susceptible. It's basically an epidemiological model that on a population level transitions groups of these four different buckets of the population. Everyone fits into the bucket in a population. So the first bucket is susceptible. And then the second bucket is E, which is exposed, people that are exposed to the disease, but maybe and incubating the disease and not in necessarily an infectious period. Then they move to I, which is infectious, and then they move to R, which is recovered. And there are lots of variations of that root model you could imagine, such as we could get more granular, like instead of just exposed, we could have exposed transition to things like hospitalized or not hospitalized, and then to even to a severe kind of bucket where they would be, those people would be in the ICU bucket. And yeah, that's kind of the basis of what we're building our modeling off of.
Very good. Using Watson Studio, what tools are you using? Machine learning?
Yeah, we're using, well, our team does primarily work on Watson Studio and some of the other IBM platforms, but yeah, so we're using Clawback for data, we're using Watson Studio. Our goal is to actually take this model, deploy it so that it can be ingested and on a daily basis with the partner that we're using. They already have like a dashboard already ready to go. The platform that we're using allows us to kind of easily provide that REST API endpoint over to the developer who's working on the dashboard.
Hey, one other question. I know you guys preach the Agile AI methodology. Is that critical in the current environment? And if it is, can you say more about it? Where can others learn to implement it? You know, what are your thoughts?
Sure, I'll take that one. So Agile AI is a proven methodology that the team has been using and practicing. Agile in general is a common software development methodology where the team works cross-functionally to design what's called MVPs, minimum viable products, and ship iterations of those products quickly. This type of methodology tends to work well because when you're building software, inevitably you would run into all kinds of unexpected roadblocks and delays, and you know, sometimes bugs pop up. And so by building these MVPs in smaller chunks, you're not pushing off the entire dev timeline. And so we incorporate this agile methodology in our engagements with clients in building, you know, AI products. So we use things like sprint development principles, working with cross-functional teams, focusing on readouts. We also incorporate things like design thinking as part of our foundational work to help clients define the use cases and scope. So there's actually a really nice free book out there written by Carla Appuglesi, Paco Nathan, and William Roberts, based on this agile AI methodology, talking about what it is and how you could adopt that. And so, you know, this is our standard and proven methodology that the team has been using. Now, with this whole COVID-19 crisis, everything has shifted to a virtual environment, and we are doing everything digitally. And so with that, we have adapted this agile AI methodology to a way that we can continue to work with our clients in a digital way. And so we are today fully open and operational, continuing to work with our clients. And so, you know, there is actually a link attached to this podcast of a blog that I put out there of the specifics of what we're doing with our clients, leveraging this methodology using digital tools and means. So, you know, I know we're short on time now, but definitely check it out and, you know, see what is different. These are uniquely things that we've developed from lessons learned, as well as, you know, new things that we've adapted specifically for the current situation.
Hey, so this kind of leads me into the question I wanted to get out here. I know the DSC team has some great resources for the community, educational, technical deep dive webinars, creation of industry accelerators. Where can folks go to get those?
Great question. So there are four things that I want to mention here that our customers, really anybody can use. The first one is there is now a free weekly webinar that is put on by the ML Hub team, and it covers most relevant topics, things like cognitive controls using natural language processing and machine learning and risk control management, you know, how the challenge of accurate and timely prediction can be useful, and many other things, you know, talking about supply chains and whatnot. So the link is in the description. You can sign up. It is a weekly, it's pretty short, you know, 30 minutes ish, with, you know, our team as well as other experts coming in to talk about these specific topics. So that's number one. Number two, as you mentioned, Al, we have these things called industry accelerators. These are packaged, kits, if you will, with things like sample data, models, documentation to kickstart specific use case based AI projects. And these are all based on Cloud Pak for Data, you know, one platform. You can build all of these things. Again, link is in the description. Feel free to check those out. They are free. You can download them and play with them and leverage them. In addition, we have, you know, adopted, as I said before, our agile AI methodology to be done virtually. So we are still fully open, operational, and we will help customers to plan, co-create, and prove the projects. And so, you know, leverage that as well. And then, you know, finally, there is the blog, you know, to kind of take a look at how, you know, even if you're not working with our DSE team, but you have a data science team, you want to continue to do those projects, what are the lessons learned, best practices, and things like that. Link is also in the description.
Very good. Thank you for that. Good information. Hey, and Brittany, when are these models that you described earlier, are they ready, or when are they going to be in a state to execute, or are they there now?
Well, the ventilator distribution and redistribution model template is ready to go if anybody is interested in using it. Again, like I said, we're still trying to find a partner that can help us make sure it's tailored and the right question is being answered in the right way. But we think we have a pretty good handle on it. That along with template data is ready. It's not online available publicly yet, but I don't know, Winnie, we should probably
reach out to the contacts here, and we'll be happy to work with any partner that's wanting to participate.
Before I close out, I want to make sure we didn't miss anything that you guys wanted to make sure was stated. I always like to give a quick pause before we wrap. Anything that we miss?
Not that we missed it, but I just want to reiterate one thing. I think it's hard to imagine what the world would look like after this is all over. But what we do know is that it will be different. And so, you know, what we're telling our customers and our own internal teams too, is that preparedness and planning ahead will be the key to not only survive but thrive on the other side of this. And data science and AI can really help. So, you know, whether you're engaging on your own on those projects, or you want to engage with the data science and AI elite team, you know, just make sure that that you look at the resources that I mentioned and leverage it to the best that you can.
Terrific. Brittany, anything you have?
No final thoughts for me.
Hey, thank you. You've given us a ton of good information. Winnie, Brittany, thank you both for being here. I greatly appreciate it. I know our listeners will too. And for all you listeners out there, stay healthy, stay safe, stay at home, and we'll see you on the podcast. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Making Data Simple podcast, where we make data fun. Be sure to visit ibmbigdatahub.com/podcasts to access the show notes and uncover even more great episodes. Remember, the views expressed here are those of the host and his guests and do not necessarily represent the views of IBM. Until next time,
let's go
over and out.